Right now, I'm looking at the rules for something called the Feminist Fight Club. Here is rule number one. You must talk about Feminist Fight Club. Here is rule number two. You must talk about Feminist Fight Club. Now, Jessica Bennett, author of the book Feminist Fight Club, you changed the rules because 10 years ago, the rule was do not talk about Feminist Fight Club. So why make the change?
Right. And of course, the rule, the first rule of the actual Fight Club is not to talk about the Fight Club.
Right.
So the Feminist Fight Club is a real group. It's a number of women that I've been meeting with since I began my career about a decade ago in New York City. And we would gather monthly and we would talk about some of the issues of sexism that we were facing in our respective workplaces. And at the time, you know, it wasn't that long ago, but it was long enough ago that there were women who were members of the club who really did feel that if it got out that they were in a feminist group in their workplaces, they would be penalized at worst and stigmatized at best. And so we didn't talk about the club. But of course, as time has gone on, it's become more and more important to talk about these issues openly.
What do you think we gain by talking about stuff that you talk about in your actual Feminist Fight Club openly?
Well, you know, the book tackles sexism in workplaces, and the idea is to provide tools and tactics for overcoming some of it. And so to me, often what we see today is not necessarily overt sexism, though, of course, that may be changing in our current political climate. But so long throughout my career, a lot of what I've experienced has been very subtle sexism, and sometimes it's hard to call out. And oftentimes it's unconscious. You know, we hear sociologists these days talk about unconscious bias and implicit bias, this idea that all of us, women and men, have biases, whether they relate to gender or to race. And the first step to overcoming biases, well, it's acknowledging that they exist. So talking about the club, talking about sexism, I think is the first step toward overcoming it.
I want to talk to you a little bit more about what that subtle sexism you just mentioned looks like when you first became aware of it. But in the book, even though you are very clear about the fact that we must talk about it, you actually keep the identities of your real Feminist Fight Club members private. You change their names. You sort of change some of their identifying characteristics. Why did you do that? Why keep their identity secret still after all these years?
In part, I didn't want to distract from the issues. You know, their names and their respective workplaces would probably distract from the issues at hand, which was that we were all facing various forms of sexism in our workplaces. So we do talk openly about the club, but I didn't feel the need to identify people personally.
I'm talking with Jessica Bennett. She's the author of the book Feminist Fight Club, an Office Survival Manual. And your earliest work experiences were here in Seattle. You interned here at KUOW. I won't ask you to talk about any experiences you had here, but you also worked at the Seattle PI, went back when it was a print newspaper.
RIP.
I know. But when you first started working, did you walk in knowing that you were going to be facing sexism, that was still a thing that you were going to have to contend with?
No. And, you know, I grew up with your typical Seattle existence, very liberal, progressive, feminist parents. So feminist, in fact, that we didn't really talk about feminism. It was just assumed and implied that I could accomplish anything my brothers could. And in fact, I did. You know, I excelled in college and in internships. And it really wasn't until my first job at Newsweek magazine in New York City, my first real staff job, when I was there for a longer period of time, that I started to notice that I wasn't rising up as quickly as my male peers. And so some of it was things like noticing that I would pitch a story and it would appear on the pages of the magazine, you know, months later or weeks later under a male byline when I'd been told that it wasn't a good idea. Or things like not feeling comfortable speaking up in meetings because they were constantly dominated by white men. And then eventually it became unearthing things like knowing that a male colleague with the exact same title and job duties was making thousands and thousands of dollars more than me. And realizing that, okay, maybe I am a feminist, maybe feminism is important, and I need to start talking about it.
Was there a tipping point for you, though? I mean, you just cited a lot of examples of that more subtle sexism that you mentioned earlier. But was there a moment when you were like, oh, this is not just me? There's something else going on here.
This had been bubbling up for a while. And in fact, it wasn't just me, but it was a number of young female writers who were very frustrated. And the tipping point for us was actually discovering the story of a 40-year-old lawsuit by the women of Newsweek magazine who had sued the company for gender discrimination in the year 1970. And we didn't know that this existed. And yet these women, who at the time were told blatantly that women do not become writers at Newsweek, that is a man's job. So you can be a secretary or you can be a researcher or a quote unquote male girl, and then you'll hand your notes over to the men. And yet they sued, and theirs was the first lawsuit of its kind, and it paved the way for female journalists. And so learning about their story and reading about it from the time and then actually tracking down those women and interviewing them, we realized that this was a collective thing and an institutional problem that had been happening at our workplace anyway for decades. And so that was the moment where we realized, okay, maybe this isn't individual. Maybe this isn't just us. Maybe this is actually a collective problem.
So how did you go from knowing in your workplace there was actually a documented history of this problem to realizing I have to talk to other women who are working and are having similar experiences? How did the club coalesce?
So we felt a bit like Newsweek had been this ground zero for what was happening culturally. And it had happened at the time in the 1970s because after the women of Newsweek sued their company, the women of the New York Times sued and the women of Time magazine sued and Sports Illustrated and the Ladies Home Journal. And for us, at the moment that this was happening, this was in 2010, this was right after David Letterman had been found to be sleeping with his assistant. And there was a gender discrimination lawsuit at the New York Post. And there had been a big report put out by Maria Shriver's foundation about the state of gender equality and just how far we were from it. And so there were all of these things swirling in the culture. And so there was a parallel there between what had happened then and what was happening now.
Jessica, I said that the subtitle of your book is an office survival manual. There are lots of techniques, strategies, ways of thinking about how to deal with things if you encounter sexism at work. But you also did a lot of research. You looked for evidence that sexism is still an issue in many workplaces. And I don't know, I guess this is a spoiler alert. You found a lot of evidence that sexism still exists in many workplaces. Gender wage gaps, how often women get interrupted at work compared to men. As you were looking at all of this research to write the book, what surprised you the most?
I think what surprised me was just how prevalent and unconscious a lot of this is. You know, I was beginning at a baseline. The subtitle is An Office Survival Manual for a Sexist Workplace. So I'm assuming that your workplace is sexist because the data shows that it probably is. That doesn't mean you're a sexist or your boss is a sexist. Maybe this is unconscious. Maybe this is institutional. You know, it does take time for industries to catch up to the fact that women were long not working in them. So if we begin there, every workplace is sexist, then we have to look at ways to overcome it. And sometimes these are large things like fighting for higher minimum wage and making sure that pay is equal between women and men and having better parental leave policies that apply to both women and men so that this is not just a women's issue. And yet there are all these subtle, smaller things. I call it death by a thousand small cuts that happen every day. Things like women being interrupted twice as frequently as men when they speak, or the fact that even in a mixed gender setting where there are women and men and you are talking about ideas, if a good idea emerges from the group, all of us, both women and men, are likely to assume that that idea came from the man. And so we have these subtle biases that exist and they're pervasive.
I'm talking with Jessica Bennett. She's the author of the book Feminist Fight Club, an office survival manual for a sexist workplace, as you just reminded me. And you've got strategies, you've got scenarios in the book. You suggest that people not read it from page to page, but just drop in where they might need it. But you also do a lot of live conversations to promote the book. And women ask you for advice on how to deal with their own workplace situations all the time. How do you handle that? now that you've become sort of the go-to person for advice on how to deal with situations in a sexist workplace?
Right. It's a lot of pressure, you know, and I worked for a long time in a corporate environment, but I now work from home as a freelance writer. So mostly I'm just having these conversations with my dog. But no, you know, my big thing is, as a journalist, I didn't want to give my own personal advice. The book is written in my voice, of course, and it tells stories of women that I've interviewed, but it's rooted in social science data. And so there's not a single bit of advice in there that isn't backed up by research. And so what I try to do when offering advice is provide people with information, fact-based information, that can make them more informed going in to deal with some of this stuff. So, you know, I don't always have the answers, and oftentimes I don't know exactly what to advise. But what I do know is there's a lot of research around this. And what I hope that I was able to do in the book is distill it in a way that might actually be digestible and fun to read.
Okay, you just said it's a lot of pressure when people ask you how to deal with their own workplace scenarios. I'm going to do that to you.
Okay.
We got a Facebook message from one of our listeners named Allie, and she writes, I've been a wedding photographer for 7 years, and often at weddings there will be a male guest with his camera, and when I'm working with my clients or shooting details, he'll come over, show me a few photos on his camera, and then explain to me how he got them just in case I wanted to get a few tips. And she says that she's never asked how long she's been a wedding photographer. She's often asked by men if this is her real job. And she says it's hard not to get really defensive because I have male colleagues who do not experience this. And Allie didn't specifically ask for help in dealing with that scenario, but I'm really curious. In that scenario, what would you do? What do you think is a good response?
It's so frustrating. This is the kind of stuff that women deal with on a day-to-day basis. And she's a wedding photographer, but imagine being a female engineer and constantly being questioned about whether you're actually an engineer, because we assume that engineers are male. So what it sounds like she's describing is the case of a mansplainer, which is a man who explains something in a condescending or pedantic manner that you already know. And this is not a term that I came up with, but it's one that has raced across the internet and become part of the pop lexicon. And I actually think it's pretty useful in the sense that suddenly we have this sort of silly term that we can use to describe what is kind of a complex and hard to explain, no pun intended, behavior. And so in that scenario, I don't know, ignore them or maybe be like, awesome, thanks for mansplaining that to me.
Just call them out for what's happening.
You know, I think calling it out is never a bad thing. And he probably won't do it again.
Probably not.
That's, I mean, one would hope.
That's pretty good advice, I think. I'm talking with Jessica Bennett. She's a journalist. She's the author of the book Feminist Fight Club, an office survival manual for a sexist workplace. And this was, the book came out of, as we said before, an actual real club. You, other women in New York, met, you called yourselves the Feminist Fight Club. Does that still exist? Does that group still meet?
It does. It still meets monthly, sometimes every other month, depending on how busy we are. And yeah, you know, some of our issues have changed. We've risen up the ranks. We're more senior. A lot of what we face now are issues of being in charge or being a female boss and the double standards that often come along with that. Or, you know, there are women in the group with children now. And how do you balance those things? And what if your workplace doesn't have a good policy that gives you time off? So some of the issues have changed, but the group continues to meet, and I don't think we'll ever stop.
We talked on the phone yesterday, and you mentioned that you've had a couple of meetings with the Feminist Fight Club since the election. What have those meetings been like?
Yeah, you know, I've made no secret about my political leanings in this election, and most of the women in that group had those same affiliations. And so we were all very disappointed and we didn't quite know what to do. So we met a couple of days after. And like we normally do, we sat around in a circle. We typically meet at one of the members' mother's houses because all of us have very small apartments. And so we have to fit somewhere. And, you know, there's wine and cheese. And in this case, we sat around and we passed around a note card and everyone had to answer. And so it was name, feeling, question, and action. And the idea was, We wanted to talk about how we were feeling. We wanted to present questions about what to do next. And then we wanted to leave there with something actionable. And, you know, none of us are activists. Most of us are in creative fields. But there's a lot of amazing art coming out of this election. And what we wanted to do was feel like we were in some way contributing or making a difference or listening. And so a lot of what that meeting ended up being was us talking about how we could better listen. You know, for me as a journalist, I was a bit smug, I think, in assuming that Hillary Clinton was just going to win. And I think I was out of touch as well, because clearly that was not the case. Clearly there are many people in this country who did not support her. And so I think all of us coming from, you know, production industries, journalism, television, we need to do better about listening. And so there were some women who, you know, made commitments to, for documentary films, travel around parts of America that are outside of our New York City bubble. And there were others who decided they were going to help organize the Women's March on Washington on January 21st. And so the idea was to come out of there with an action.
Speaking of action, I am imagining men listening to this interview thinking, I am not the enemy. I try to be a good guy. So how does a man become a part of the Feminist Fight Club?
There's a very strong men's auxiliary to the Feminist Fight Club, and we welcome men to apply. No, just kidding. There's no application process formally. And in fact, if you want to be a member, like, consider yourself in. We need all the men that we can get as part of this battle. And I think that male allies are so, so important to this struggle. And in your workplace, men are typically, you know, unfortunately, it's sometimes still the leaders. And so if you can have them on your side, then they can actually really affect change. And I think that the reality is that, you know, despite words like mansplaining and manterrupting and this sort of humor in pitting men as the enemy, men are actually hugely, hugely important allies, and we have to encourage them to talk openly about these issues. It's okay to screw up sometimes, but they're so important to this struggle.
So if a man notices another man mansplaining, he can call that other man out for being a mansplainer too. This is not just a word that belongs to women, yes?
Exactly, and probably he won't be called a nag after he does it.
Jessica Bennett, thank you so much. This has been really fun.
Thanks for having me.
Jessica Bennett is the author of the book Feminist Fight Club, an office survival manual for a sexist workplace. And she and I will talk again at Town Hall Seattle on December 27th. We're tweeting out a link to that event now. This is The Record.